The Hoop Heads podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello, Hoop Heads. This is Alan Stein Jr. My new book, Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, will be available from all major book retailers on January 8th. Raise Your Game takes a rare peek behind the curtain and shows you what the top coaches and players in the game do during the unseen hours. I share their routines, rituals, and habits, as well as proven strategies that you can implement with your team immediately. If you want to maximize your coaching impact and influence, order your copy today at raiseyourgamebook.com.
When you're in college, you know, one of the things you love about the process of coaching is more so just, you know, you're shaping guys for the rest of their life. You know, you're recruiting guys to play for you for 4 years, you know, but it's really the next 40 years of their life that you're going to be a part of their life. I mean, I have guys that I played with. I have guys that I've recruited, guys that I've coached in college, and just making that impact and making those connections, you know, with your teammates, with guys you've coached. It's just something that, you know, I always wanted to do and wanted to be a part of. And it's really, you know, changed my life.
Coach Bobby Jordan is in his first year as a head varsity basketball coach at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Bobby played point guard under James Bruiser Flint at Drexel University from 2005 to 2009, and then transitioned into coaching as the assistant director of basketball operations at his alma mater from 2010 to 2012. In 2012, Coach Jordan became one of the youngest Division I assistant coaches in the country. He coached, developed, and recruited numerous all-league selections while at Drexel University. After leaving Drexel, Jordan won 23 games and led Girard College to a Penn Jersey League championship in his first year as a head coach. Coach Jordan is now a head varsity basketball coach at IMG Academy, where they have teams at the postgraduate, varsity, junior varsity, and middle school levels, and a unique developmental approach to each. The IMG Basketball Academy program provides some of the nation's most effective training environments. If you're loving the Hoop Heads podcast, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. And you can also check out our brand new Hoop Heads Pod YouTube channel. After you finish soaking up the knowledge from any of our great guests, please leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen. An assist is always appreciated. Have your notebook handy while you listen to this episode with Coach Bobby Jordan from IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. We had some audio issues while recording with Coach Jordan that we did our best to fix, but after the 25-minute mark, the audio gets a little choppy at times. We felt the great content that Coach Jordan shared was worth saving. Please enjoy the episode. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to the Hoop Heads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are here with, from IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida, Coach Bobby Jordan. Bobby, welcome to the podcast.
Guys, thanks a lot for having me. I'm really excited to be a part of the podcast tonight. And can't wait to get started.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you on tonight, learn a little bit more about your basketball journey. And we'll start by digging into your experience with basketball as a kid. Can you talk a little bit about how you got into the game when you were a young kid and what your first experiences were with basketball?
Yeah, Mike, just growing up in Philadelphia, it's such a, basketball city, the basketball culture, throughout the city, it kind of just, you know, get you into the game at an early age. I was fortunate enough to be around the right people growing up, and it's, you know, big on the AAU scene, the workout scene, and just continue to, you know, have a great love for the game. And as I got older and, you know, started, you know, playing with some of the better players in the area that were around at my time, and it just really became infectious to me. And something that, you know, I wanted to pursue, you know, not only in high school, but, you know, early on, I knew that it was something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And something that I've been fortunate enough to be able to do.
Can you talk a little bit about, you're a little younger than some of the other coaches that we've had on, and a lot of the guys kind of grew up in the era that I did, which is, the 80s. I graduated from high school in 1988. And so the basketball scene at that time was a little bit different. We, I think, probably played a little bit more pickup basketball. There wasn't the same level of AAU basketball and training and all the things that are available to players today. So can you talk a little bit about how, for you, how you went about taking advantage of the current system in terms of what you did from an AAU standpoint and skill training standpoint as a player to improve your game as you were growing up.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, it was around that time where, you know, especially in Philadelphia, leagues were at the height of, you know, their existence in terms of, you know, the Sunny Hill League is a very big league in the Philadelphia area. And just being a part of that, it kind of brought, you know, kids from all over, different parts of the city, different parts of the suburbs. And really what it did for you as a player is it made you better because you realized that, you know, in your little town or in your, you know, CYO school or region, you know, you might have been the best player, you know, during the winter time. But once you see other guys in other areas of the city, it makes you work harder because you realize that, you know, there's other guys around that are just as good, if not better than you, and you're going to most likely end up facing those guys when you get to high school and even when you get to college for most guys. So just taking advantage of, you know, some of the leagues, and with AAU, it was kind of just really, really starting to get going. And I really think it made you compete at that time. There wasn't as many teams as there is now. There's a lot more teams, especially with the whole new sneaker circuit that has started in the last 5 to 10 years. So it really, the competition was really strong, and it made you want to become better as a player because not everything was just given to you. You had to work for every spot you needed to get to be on one of those teams and to play against some of those players.
How would you compare the amount of time you spent playing pickup basketball versus how much time you spent playing in some of the organized leagues and with an organized team? Because that's one of the things that we've talked about, again, with some of the older coaches that we've had on who are, again, closer in demographic age to me, that it just seems like there's a different level of the amount of time that people have spent either playing pickup basketball or playing organized basketball. And of course you kind of tend to gravitate towards the system you grew up with, but how did you balance out your time? Like, did you spend more of your time playing in organized games or more time, or how much time did you spend playing pickup basketball?
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate in that regard. I actually worked at our rec center that was in my area. So during the day, me and a buddy of mine who went on to play in college as well, we worked at the rec center. So in the mornings, we would go there. We would work out on our own. We would invite some guys up there to play pickup in the middle of the day because, you know, obviously when you're, you know, young and in high school, you know, you really don't have a job, you know, during the day. Sometimes you work at night. In the summers, but we were able to, you know, create our own type of pickup game throughout the day and kind of get out there, which I thought made me a lot better, made the guys in our area a lot better. And at night is kind of when you played in those organized leagues, and you don't see that much anymore. I feel like in kids, it's kind of like if it's not set up for them and it's not organized, then they just don't go to it. Whereas, you know, kids today, if they just have their game or their workout at night during the day, especially in the summer, they don't really do much because, you know, nothing's really set up for them and they need somebody there with them. So it's more so, I think, with kids today, it's learning how to take initiative, you know, as you're continuing to grow as a player, because there's not going to be a coach or a trainer there 24 hours a day to work you out. And sometimes you just got to go on your own, whether you got to grab a friend or a teammate to go to the playground with you or go to the park with you to shoot around or, you know, play one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three. And I think taking advantage of those opportunities at a young age really helped me as a player. And it's something that I've seen kind of take a backseat recently in basketball.
So when you were at Drexel and then now at IMG, do you notice that kids are not going out and just grabbing a ball and getting to the gym and working out on their own? Do you find that most of the time, even the players that, you know, you coached at Drexel or the guys that you have now at IMG, that most of the time they need someone there kind of organizing for them? Or do you still have some kids that have been around your programs that have, you know, taken that initiative and just gone and, you know, got shots up or, you know, worked themselves out, for lack of a better way to put it?
Yeah, I mean, you'll have a good mixture of kids who, you know, are kind of self-driven and, you know, want to be good and be in there on their own. And then I feel like sometimes you have some guys who, you know, need that little extra help of a coach maybe just texting them and say, listen, how about you come to the gym, you know, 20 or 30 minutes before practice today, so we can get some shots up, so we can work on some player development stuff before we actually get started. So I think, you know, at times, you know, some guys just don't know. They never have been, you know, brought up that way, or they haven't been playing the game that long. You know, they might have not been in a situation where, you know, their family was, you know, around basketball a lot of the times. So I think you see it in kids that, especially at the high school and college level, that have kind of picked up the game from a younger age and have continued on. But you also see kids that might have developed later on or played different sports throughout their life, and they kind of just don't understand the importance of doing some of the extra at times.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think you make a good point there that, you know, sometimes kids just don't know what any other system other than the one that they're brought up in. And, you know, a lot of the time there's so much stuff now available. I don't know how it is down by you or how it was in Philly when you were there, but here in Cleveland it feels like you could, you know, turn the corner and there's a guy with a shingle out that's, you know, a trainer or this or that. And so you can pretty much find it anywhere you want to go. And so from a kid's perspective, and I would think also probably from a parent of a basketball player's perspective, you know, there's all, you can always find those opportunities. And so the necessity to go out and play 2-on-2 on the driveway, or go down to the park and play 3-on-3, or get to a gym and, you know, just have a 5-on-5 run is not the same as it was, again, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I agree. And it's something that I think if kids started to do a little bit more, you know, they would become better basketball players. Like you talked about, you know, skills trainers and having those opportunities. You know, we were fortunate to have Stan Van Gundy last week come down to IMG, and he discussed player development. But he said one of the biggest things about player development that people don't realize is, you know, the game is played 5-on-5. And, you know, I think one of the things he talked about where he sees kids struggling, or, you know, even older guys struggling sometimes, is, you know, just their basic IQ of the game. And I think for, you know, for some guys, like you said, that have played 15 to 20 years ago and they played a lot of 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 5-on-5 in the park to get better, you know, it taught you how to play. It wasn't just out there dribbling with cones or, you know, going between your legs against a chair. You know, when I worked for Bruiser Flint at Drexel, he had one of the funniest comments I ever heard when I was working guys out sometimes. And if I would have cones out there, and he would always talk about, it looks good, you know, they're dribbling through the cones, but when we play Saturday night, there's going to be hands and feet out there. You know, so you have to move a little differently. He used to always say, stop putting the cones out there. There's hands and feet when we play. You know, so that's one of the things I think that, you know, might become a little bit more, you know, prevalent as we continue on in basketball, of maybe even going back to, you know, some teaching moments where, you know, it's more 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 5-on-5, you know, but slowing it down, you know, talking a lot more about how the game is supposed to be played rather than just, you know, make three different moves and then shoot a pull-up jump shot. You know, does that happen? How many times does that really happen in the game is very rare.
So from a coaching standpoint, as you look at how you build out your practices, do you find yourself maybe more than you did in the past putting together a practice plan where you have more, let's say, small-sided game type situations where you're going those 2-on-2 situations or 3-on-3 situations, as opposed to just, again, drills in isolation, kind of like what you were describing there that you might see with a, you know, a skills trainer and some cones? You guys try to do more, I don't know what you call it, scrimmage type situations where it's a smaller sided, you know, a small sided game, a 3-on-3, 2-on-2, like that.
Yeah, 100%. It's something that myself as a coach, I've really tried to change over the last couple of years, is kind of putting my guys more in situations that we're going to see in the game, whether it's, you know, the offense that we run, you know, kind of just going at each other using that, or, you know, if we have a scout, we used to always call it Series D in college, where, you know, we're running some of the other team stuff, really just to get guys in the mindset of, you know, it's going to be different in the game. And, you know, sometimes you might be going under a screen. Sometimes you might be going over a screen. More so just making the players think on the floor instead of, like you said, doing more skill-type drills that, you know, look great and, you know, they're good to add in your practices a lot of the times at certain points, but you can also fall too in love with them and you could do too much of that. Whereas I think there's other times for that, whether it be in your practice, whether it be before or after your practice. So I think it's a lot more of, you know, breaking stuff down into, like you said, 2-on-2, 3-on-3 type areas where you're showing your players game type situations.
So how much film breakdown do you do before you get into practices to kind of identify the types of situations that your players are facing in games? Do you use that film preparation to then help guide you in terms of what kind of things you set up in the 3-on-3 or the 2-on-2? Like, let's say we want to do an advantage disadvantage where a team's already in a help side position and then they have to scramble and recover and communicate, things like that. Do you get that off of film or how does that process go?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times we'll look at the film from the previous game. We'll talk about things that we did well, whether it's offensive or defensively, things we need to work on. Just thinking about our last couple games we've been seeing a lot of zone defense, and we've been struggling with our zone defense. We like to play a lot of man at times, but sometimes we do switch the zone based on certain matchups. So we will do some like breakdown stuff with our film and then show our guys, you know, whether it's ball movement, you know, making a certain amount of passes before we look to attack the gaps instead of, you know, just shooting off the first pass or different reads when we, you know, set a ball screen in our zone. We really break that down. And we're fortunate here at IMG that we use a system called Crossover, which is kind of my first time really using this system besides when I coached in the EYBL with Team Final. But it's been unbelievable to have at the high school level because it really allows you to break down some stuff for your guys that, you know, I haven't seen many high school kids be afforded the opportunity to have that type of film and have that type of breakdown and then being able to translate that into your practices.
Yeah, I'm amazed by those services. I think back to, again, when I was playing in my playing career and you had the VHS tape and you're hitting rewind on the button and you're going too far and too fast and you can never get anything. And now it's just...
And then you watch it too much and the VHS no longer works.
Yeah,
and
it's crazy that you just send it, you know, you just send that, you know, send the file away and it comes back broken down the way it does with, you know, whether it's Crossover or Huddle, whoever, you know, whatever service you're using. It's just, it's incredible what they can do.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, I remember playing in high school, like, we never watched film, and now it's, you know, especially here, what I've seen at IMG, you know, it's a college type of atmosphere when you have your film set up and everything else that we're able to do, especially with that system. It prepares kids because, in the end, you know, guys at the high school level, they want to play in college, and you want them to see that when they're in high school because it could be a shock to them when they get to college. Like, what is film? Why are we doing this? Some kids don't understand that, but, you know, it's helpful. It's helpful and it makes them better in the end.
Absolutely. I think there's an art to watching film and be able to know what you're watching and what you're looking for and being able to break down film. And as a coach, I think if you can provide that to your players, both from an immediate standpoint where they can develop and take things that they're seeing and use them immediately, but then also if you're talking about players like some of the guys that you're coaching that have aspirations to play at the next level, then you're also teaching them a skill that's going to help them on the road down the road in their career for sure. So let's take a step back to your own high school career and your own recruitment and talk about at what point did you always have the dream of playing college basketball, and then at what point in your career did you realize that it was going to be potentially, you know, it could become a real dream? And then what was your recruitment like to Drexel?
I mean, I always had the dream of playing college basketball. That it's one of the main reasons why I chose to attend Roman Catholic, which is one of the storied programs in Philadelphia history, and was able to be a 4-year starter there. And then as I got along in my career, you know, I was getting recruited by a couple of Division II, Division III schools going into my junior, senior year. And one thing that I, like I talked about earlier, is I always knew I wanted to be in basketball. And I knew that probably after college, you know, it wasn't going to happen for me on a professional level. So I really started thinking about what could I do in basketball without playing. And, you know, obviously the number one answer most of the time is coaching. So I was actually getting an award at a banquet in Philadelphia, and Bruiser Flint was the happened to be like the guest speaker at the banquet. And, you know, he came up to me and we talked a little bit. And a couple weeks later, you know, it was talked about of me possibly walking on to Drexel to play for him because he knew I wanted to be a coach. And he said, listen, I'll help you. I'll teach you the ropes of coaching. And we had an unbelievable staff at that time with Jeff Arnold, who's now at St. Joe's, Mike Connors. And, you know, I was basically getting a degree in coaching when I decided to go to Drexel. And that's the main reason why I decided to, you know, pretty much pass the opportunities to play on the Division II or Division III level and have a good career, because, you know, I always wanted to go into coaching, and an opportunity to play for a coach like Bruiser Flint and at a program like Drexel at that time was just too hard to pass up. And, I mean, it was hard at first. Obviously, you know, you go from being a four-year starter in high school and playing 30 to 32 minutes a game, and now you're at the end of the bench and, you know, you're getting pretty bad in practice every day. We had an unbelievable point guard, Bashir Mason, who's the head coach at Wagner University now, and I've never been guarded like that my first 2 years that I had to play in practice. And, you know, he was one of the best defenders in the country at the time. And, you know, that was kind of a rude awakening. And those times were tough just from a playing standpoint. But the one thing that I always knew was coaching was going to be in my future. And, you know, this is what I needed to do. So every year I just tried to, you know, get better at something or learn something different. Even in college, you know, working camps, I coached an AAU team when I was a sophomore in college, you know, and had guys who Raheem Christmas went on to play at Syracuse, and, you know, had a couple other guys who went on to play Division I basketball over those past couple years. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure I prepared myself, because in the end, that's what I wanted to do for a living. And I was fortunate, you know, I was steered right by the right people, and, you know, and not worrying about playing time or, you know, scoring any points or playing out amount of minutes. It was all about the future for me, and everything worked out in the end. And it was probably, a mature decision by someone who was, at the time, was probably very immature. Yeah, it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, completely understand. So two questions from that. One, what advice, because there are lots of players who are in – not exactly the situation that you were in, but a similar situation in that they went from, you know, being someone who plays a lot to suddenly I'm on a new team, whether that is because they, you know, went from high school to college, or maybe they went from middle school to high school, or maybe they went from the JV team to the varsity or whatever. But they went from a situation where they were playing a lot to a situation where they weren't playing very much at all. And suddenly they have, as you described, you have a new role, and you went from playing a lot of minutes to playing very little. What advice would you give to a player in that situation? How did you cope with that? Obviously, one of the things you said was that you looked at the future and what you were trying to accomplish. But what did you do on a day-to-day basis when you're at practice and you're working hard and you're doing your best and game time rolls around and you don't play? How did you cope with that, and what advice would you have for other players in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, the one way that I coped with it was I think number one is to be honest with yourself. I think a lot of times, you know, players and even parents, they're just not honest about their abilities or at that current time. Now, it takes a lot of hard work. It would have took an extreme amount of hard work on the court, hard work off the court in the weight room for someone like myself to, you know, beat somebody out for a position at that level. So I think first you really just have to be honest with yourself and ask yourself, am I better than that person who's playing ahead of me? And if you're not, you're not. And, you know, because you know, coaches are always going to play who's going to help them win. You know, the coach isn't not playing you because he doesn't like you, or, you know, you're not doing the right things, and he's playing the guys that are going to help him win. So the first thing I would say is just be honest with yourself of, you know, where your role is at on the team, and then that leads into, you know, what can I do to overcome that? You know, for me, it's a little bit different, obviously, because I had more of a coaching aspiration. You know, I just continued to work hard because, you know, I love the game, and that's what I wanted to, you know, help the team out with every day in practice, to make the other guys better. But really, I think what it comes down to is, you know, number one, like I said, being honest with yourself, and, you know, the next step is, you know, talking to the coach. What do I need to do? How can I beat out the guy in front of me? Am I doing enough? What can I do more? Because I always think coaches, they're very honest about that. I take pride in doing that as a coach, and just being honest with my players. And I think, you know, kids sometimes they're a little bit intimidated to maybe ask a coach that, but that's not a bad question to ask. I'd rather a player on my team ask me that question than have a, you know, a parent or a guardian call me up and ask me that. I don't think that's the best way to approach it.
So what I hear you saying there, and I think it's one of the things that's a big challenge for a lot of players, is being honest with yourself. And I'm sure you see it as a coach that a lot of times players may have an overinflated opinion of themselves. And I know for sure, for a fact, that many times the parents of players definitely have an overinflated opinion of their child's ability. So I think that's great advice, that as a player, if you can look yourself in the mirror and really understand where you are in terms of how good you are compared to the players on your team and the players that you're competing against, I think that is going to give you a much more solid way of looking at it and being able to figure out a plan for how to increase your playing time if you're not getting the opportunity to play as much as you wanted. And then I also like the fact that you said to go in and have a conversation with the coach. And too many players, I think, don't do that. Because to your point, I think any coach would be more than willing to have that particular conversation, because as coaches, we want to help our players get better, because when our players get better, helps us to win more and helps them as an individual. So I think those are two great pieces of advice that you just shared for somebody who's in a position where they're not playing maybe as much as they had hoped they would. And then the other thing that you said earlier was you talked about how you just were focused on, you know, going into coaching throughout your 4 years, and you just kind of tried to grow and learn each time that you were, you know, you were out on the floor, and Coach Flint would, you know, kind of took you under his wing and was trying to show you the ropes of what it would mean to, you know, to be in the coaching profession. So what was it about, obviously you knew you wanted to stay in the game of basketball, but what was it specifically about coaching that you said, man, what do you love about the process of coaching?
I mean, when you're in college, you know, one of the things you love about the process of coaching is more so just, you know, you're shaping guys for the rest of their life. You know, you're recruiting guys to play for you for 4 years, you know, but it's really the next 40 years of their life that you're going to be a part of their life. I mean, I have guys that I played with. I have guys that I've recruited, guys that I've coached in college, and just making that impact and making those connections. You know, with your teammates, with guys you've coached, it's just something that, you know, I always wanted to do and wanted to be a part of. And it's really, you know, changed my life. You know, like I said, some of the guys that I played with are now head Division I coaches. You know, some of the guys are, you know, working, you know, in business. Some of the guys are overseas coaching for pro teams. You know, so just like making those connections and just, you know, being around guys from such a diverse background, you know, it makes you better not only as a basketball player, but it makes you better as a person. You know, so that was one of the things that, you know, I really saw in coaching that was valuable. And I think, you know, now at the high school level, it's a lot about the teaching. You know, you're teaching guys that, you know, like we talked about earlier, have aspirations to move on to play in college. And it's really just showing them what it's all about. showing them the work that they need to put in, showing them, you know, the culture that you need to build within a team, because it's going to be like that in college. And they need to realize that at a young age. And if they do, they'll be even more successful when they get to the college ranks.
Yeah, the ability to build those relationships with players, I think, is one of the things that's most satisfying as a coach, that you get to know the kids, you get to have an impact on them, not just in the moment with your current team, but also a lot of times you're imparting wisdom and advice and things that, you know, maybe have nothing directly to do with basketball, that those kids don't see the payoff for that until 15 or 20 years down the road, and they remember, you know, some of those lessons that you were able to teach them as a coach. And I think that's got to be one of the most gratifying things. I know personally, whenever I have a former player that, you know, picks up the phone and calls me, and you hear their voice on the other end of the line, they say, "Hey, coach," and they just want to share something that went on in their life. To me, there's nothing more satisfying than those moments where you know that you've had an impact. And I'm sure that those things, you know, obviously have already happened to you as a young coach, getting into, you know, making an impact with your players and having kids reach back out to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, our biggest motto, you know, as a player and as a coach when I was growing up is, you know, obviously your players are your most important people in your program, and you got to take great care of them. And like I said, not just the 4 years or, you know, the 2 years that they're with you, you know, but for the rest of their life. And just staying connected with them. And you never know when you can help somebody out who you played with, or, you know, who you coached, or you never know when they can help you out. You know, that's always going to happen at some point in your life. You know, those type of situations are going to occur.
I think that's great advice too for anybody who is a current player out there that might be listening, or especially if you're a young coach just starting out in the coaching profession, the ability to build the relationships like Bobby's talking about, and whether it's with fellow coaches, whether it's by attending coaching clinics, whether it's just through social media, however you can make contact and build relationships with people. I think one of the things that we all understand and know pretty well about the coaching profession is, one, that when you have relationships with people, that tends to open doors for you, and then conversely, you can open doors for other people. And then one of the things that we found as part of doing the podcast is just how willing coaches are to share their knowledge with other coaches. And the more relationships you have, the more opportunity you have to reach out and really grow yourself as a, you know, grow yourself as a coach, or if you're still playing as a player. And so I think that that's one of the things that, just from hearing you talk here for the first half hour or so that we've been on the podcast, those relationships, such like the one that you had with Coach Flint, are really what it's all about.
Yep.
So if you go back to the time when you finished your playing career at Drexel and now you transition onto the coaching staff, can you talk a little bit about what that was like to go from being a player in the program to suddenly being a coach in the program?
Yeah, one, I mean, being a young coach is probably the hardest thing, especially at a Division I school, you know, because you go from being on the team and being around the guys. And I mean, when I first started out, we had like two or three guys on the team that were older than me, even when I was my first year as a coach. I remember one of our guys getting hurt at an away game, and I was, you know, obviously had to go to the hospital with him as he was getting taken care of. And, you know, the nurse asked me, like, you know, are you his teammate? And I was like, no, like, I'm his coach. You know, I know he's older than me, and, you know, he looks a lot older than me. You know, so that's a big adjustment, is really just going from, you know, somebody who's maybe out on Friday night with them, you know, during last season, and now you're checking to make sure they're doing the right things on Friday night. You know, so that's kind of the biggest adjustment. And it's, you know, I think you got to build that respect, you know, throughout time. It doesn't come, I don't think, in your first season. I mean, I think you approach it as, you know, you want to be the guy on staff who's in the gym with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if they need you, you know, either working them out or, you know, helping them out with, you know, maybe, you know, some other stuff off the court that they might be struggling with, you know, just building a relationship as a coach with them now. You know, because it's no longer that player-to-player relationship. Now it's player-to-coach relationship, and you got to build that up. It's just not going to come right away. So that's kind of a big adjustment, especially going, you know, from player to coach right away. And that's whether you're, you know, an ops guy on staff, an assistant coach on staff, you know, it doesn't matter. You're still a coach in their eyes, and you have to continue to build that trust with them and even build that relationship even more. Because now it's a different relationship. Like I said, now it's the coach to player relationship. So just building that up over time, especially the summertime when you first get started, for any young coaches that, you know, might have this happen to them, you know, that's a big time to do it. Cause obviously that's when you have the most time with the players, more so than during the season. You know, that's a big time to really even continue to build that relationship into the player to coach relationship.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, Alan Stein Jr.
Hello, Hoopheads. This is Alan Stein Jr. My new book, Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, will be available from all major book retailers on January 8th. Raise Your Game takes a rare peek behind the curtain and shows you what the top coaches and players in the game do during the unseen hours. I share their routines, rituals, and habits, as well as proven strategies that you can implement with your team immediately. If you want to maximize your coaching impact and influence, order your copy today at RaiseYourGameBook.com.
So I hear you talking about like building that relationship. Did you get any pushback from the players originally because you were here? You were just playing with them the season prior, and now you're trying to coach them. They were like, "Well, he was just playing with us. What does he know?" Did you ever have that problem or not really?
I never really had that problem. You know, just because I was kind of that guy that always would help guys out in the gym, even as a player. You know, would want to, if they wanted to get up extra shots, you know, if they didn't have a coach available or if our guys were on the road recruiting, you know, just getting in the gym with them and whether even if I was doing the workout or not, you know, just being there for them to give them confidence in their game, you know, maybe show them some of the stuff that we've done in practice, you know, that might help their game. You know, so a lot of the pushback I didn't really get in terms of in that regard. Just because it's, like I said, it was something that I worked on early on as a player. And then when it led into coach, it was kind of a seamless transition. But it's something that, you know, it's very difficult to do, you know, right away.
Yeah, I would think it would be difficult just from a standpoint of, again, you go from, like you said, hey, you're a teammate 1 year and you're, you know, you're out on Friday night with them, and then the next year you're making sure that they're, you know, you're doing the bed check on them on Friday night.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
You know, they're just looking at you from a totally different perspective. So from the same, let's flip that around and look at it from the other side of it, where what was something that you found out after you became a coach that maybe you weren't aware of as a player in terms of what went on behind the scenes with the coaching staff? What was the biggest revelation from becoming a part of the staff as opposed to being a player on the team, something that you didn't realize was going on or was needed when you were playing?
I mean, the biggest revelation I think you always find out first as a coach is just the amount of hours that a coach puts in, especially at the college level. You know, when you're a player, practice is at 3 o'clock. You know, you might have had one or two classes that day, you know, and then, you know, you show up at the gym, 2:15, get yourself ready for practice. You know, you're done at, you know, 5 o'clock, let's just say. So, you know, that was maybe 2.5 to 3 hours of your day. Well, the coaching staff was in there probably at 8 a.m., you know, preparing for, you know, either the next opponent, you know, doing some recruiting stuff, practice that day, thinking about that. You know, and they were there leading up to the whole day, and then they were also there probably, you know, another hour and a half or 2 hours after practice. You know, so instead of, as a player, you really have maybe a 4 to 5 hour type of day, you know, now you have 12-hour days. You know, so you really grow an appreciation for, you know, when you move on to that other side, the amount of work that your coaches put in throughout the day and throughout the season.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things for sure that players at whatever level don't necessarily understand all the time and the hours that coaches spend preparing, whether it's practice, whether it's preparing for the next opponent through scouting or watching film or whatever the case might be. I just think players have a very, very limited viewpoint on how much time the coaching staff puts in. If you had to think about your experience as at the college level, what's the part of college coaching that you enjoyed the most? Was there any one part that stood out to you and like, boy, if I could just spend, you know, 75% of my time doing this, that's what I'd really love to be doing?
Yeah, recruiting for sure. You know, I enjoyed recruiting more than anything in the college ranks, just going to, you know, games in different cities, games in different states, you know, seeing how, you know, high school basketball is in Washington, D.C. compared to Philadelphia, creating the relationships with the AAU coaches, with the high school coaches, even with the parents. And, you know, like I have a kid that I recruited at Drexel who's now here at UCF. We're about an hour and a half from UCF down here in Bradenton. And, you know, I talked to his dad, you know, once or twice, you know, a month still. And he hasn't played for me in 3 years, you know. But it's just, you know, like we talked about earlier, just continuing those relationships with people. And, you know, that was the best part, I thought, was the recruiting aspect of it, you know, just getting out and, you know, AAU tournaments, high school games, and just seeing different types of basketball throughout the whole country.
So on that point, do you have any crazy recruiting stories? Because I mean, you've got to have something. There's got to be something that you went to a gym and you couldn't believe that it was a gym, or just an experience that you have that sticks out in your mind. Do you have any?
I have a couple. I mean, I was Coach Flynn. Oh, he never liked recruiting with me. I'm the worst driver that he's ever had in terms of when we used to go to games together. So we had a pretty memorable drives, you know, up and down I-95, especially while we recruited at Drexel a lot on the East Coast. So I've gotten lost a bunch of times in the car and almost gotten fired a couple times just for not being able to, you know, follow directions, or, you know, he just told me I'm a bad driver. He refuses to drive with me anymore. So nothing really crazy. I mean, there's tons of stories about, you know, AAU events.
Yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, again, when you go out on the AAU circuit, there's lots of interesting things that that go on, and it's just.
But Mike's favorite Twitter account is AAU Bingo. I don't know if you've ever seen that one, but you should check it out.
Yeah, if you haven't seen AAU.
I've seen a bunch of their stuff,
there's some funny stuff on there for sure. I always get a kick out of going on there and seeing some of the crazy stuff that is to be seen there. So you get done at Drexel, your staff has to move on, and you get an opportunity to go to IMG Academy. Can you talk a little bit about how that opportunity came to you and why you decided to pursue that opportunity as opposed to maybe going and trying to find another college position?
I mean, IMG Academy, you know, is one of the most remarkable places that I've ever seen in terms of, you know, athletics as a whole. I was a little bit familiar with it as a college coach. I came down here a couple times to recruit, and just was absolutely amazed about, you know, everything about it. And, you know, was fortunate enough to get the opportunity to be able to come down here and coach. And it was kind of an opportunity that I really couldn't pass up. It was really hard for me and my family to leave the Philadelphia area. My wife is from Philadelphia. We've never left the area for high school, for college, and then make the move to Florida. Was just in terms of being able to grow as a coach, you know, and to be around great people and great kids. IMG really offered, you know, everything in that regard, and it was really happy to be down here and to be able to coach every day at such an unbelievable school.
Can you talk a little bit about the way that IMG basketball is structured? I know we talked about it earlier on our call before the podcast, just in terms of how many teams you guys have and how it's organized and kind of where your position slots into the program as a whole.
Yes, we have
pretty much a postgraduate program for boys and girls. And then we have a high school varsity program where we have about five teams. We also have a high school varsity girls team as well. And then we also have a JV and a middle school team. So in total, we have about 14 to 15 teams on campus, just in terms of, you know, just the basketball program, like I said, from middle school all the way up to postgraduate school. We have four courts. My group and the varsity group, our guys train in the mornings, and they go to school in the afternoon, and vice versa. The JV and middle school group, they go to school in the mornings, and then they train in the afternoon. So it's a totally different setup than really what you're used to in, you know, some high school settings where you school throughout the day, you practice after school, and, you know, you might lift and then practice after school, and you might be there till, you know, 7:30, 7 o'clock at night. Our guys' practices are pretty much done, you know, around 11:30, 12 o'clock each day. And then they go on and, you know, obviously do their schoolwork for the rest of the day. And it's just an interesting setup, and it allows you to, you know, kind of be creative as a coach in your practices, and, you know, especially now, you know, into our season in terms of shoot around, and that's the thing that usually you don't get a chance to do on the high school level. So I think it really benefits our kids, and it allows our coaches to be, you know, a little bit creative.
Can you talk a little bit about the schedule that you guys play in terms of how much travel do you do, and what are the schools that you typically are competing against?
Yeah, so this is, you know, I've been really relying on a lot of guys down here in Florida. We play a very competitive schedule down here in Florida. Our first half of the year, we played a lot of top teams, you know, in the Tampa area, Clearwater area, Lakeland area, Florida here. You know, we've traveled, you know, to a couple showcase events here the first half of the year. We got a couple games down in Miami in the second half of the year against some of the top schools down there. And I've just been impressed with, you know, the amount of talent down here, how hard the teams play, how well coached they are. You know, like I said, I recruited down here a little bit, but never really got fully immersed in the whole Florida high school basketball culture and, you know, how the teams are. So it's been really, really great to see, you know, a huge number of teams down here that every night pretty much we don't have an easy game. And that's really hard to get in a lot of places.
Yeah, I'm sure it affords you a little bit of a unique situation that you're able to compete against some of the top high school programs in the state of Florida, and that just gives your kids an opportunity to, again, expose themselves to that level of competition, which I'm assuming that the majority of kids that are a part of your program have aspirations of playing at some level in college, whether that be the Division I level or even the lower levels beyond that. So the opportunity to play against that kind of competition, I'm sure, is something that you guys can use as a selling point to try to get people down to IMG. Can you talk about some of the ancillary things around the basketball program that maybe, you know, your normal public high school or private high school might not have access to, that, you know, your kids get access to as a, you know, as a student at IMG?
Yeah, I mean, we have an unbelievable program that we call APD, Athletic Performance Development. And our guys, in the preseason, we go through it about twice a week, sometimes one, depending on the schedule. During the season, as coaches, we build that into our schedule. And just having access to such things as, you know, we have leadership coaches, we have mental coaches that really do workshops with our teams. I know a big thing now in coaching, and you see it all over in podcasts or in books, is, you know, just talking about building culture in teams and, you know, leadership books or leadership presentations that, you know, are just not for business, they're for sports as well. And our guys are getting exposed to that, and it's really an advantage for a kid to experience something like that. And the one thing that helps as a coach is they also get another voice. You know, they're always not hearing your voice. It's, you know, another coach. Our mental coaches come to our practices, pretty much every day. Our leadership coach is always around, you know, talking to the kids, talking to us as coaches, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with your team right now, what's going on with such individuals. Can I talk to them? Can we do a workshop that can help them? What are you struggling with right now? We also have issues to, you know, sit our kids down and do workshops with them about, you know, how they have to properly hydrate before their games, you know, what they should be eating when we go on the road, what they should be eating even in our own campus, that will help them. I know they just had a huge article about one of our student athletes came down here from Richmond, Virginia. He's just totally reshaped his body. He's committed to North Carolina, and his form, I think 4 or 5 months down there, is just really brought into the whole nutritional aspect that we have down here, and has really just reshaped his body. And that's just something that, you know, as coaches, it's great to have. Like you said, you don't have that at maybe a normal public high school. But I think the kids, it's something that, you know, they take advantage of. And the guys that do take advantage of it, they see the rewards. Because most kids at that high school level, they don't have the opportunity. And even at many college levels, they don't have that opportunity to be exposed to that type of stuff. So it's really, I think it's big for us as coaches to make sure our kids are getting exposed to that type of stuff. It's, for the kids, it's making sure they're buying into, you know, those other activities that we have on campus that are going to benefit them, not only as players, but as people as well.
Yeah, I think as a coach, it takes some of those things off your plate that, it, you know, if you think about a normal high school coach in a public school, can be concerned about all those things, but they don't have the time or the expertise to be able to provide the kind of guidance that, you know, obviously the kids there at IMG are able to get from the nutrition and from the leadership and from the mental aspects. So as you think about that, what are some things that you do to build? Obviously, there's a culture around the entire basketball program at IMG, but within the confines of your team that you're coaching, what are some of the things that you do to try to build a culture, and what kind of culture are you trying to build within your team?
You know, I'm real big on, you know, in terms of building culture, you know, having, you know, huge accountability with everybody, and kids need to see that. I think some of the time, especially at the high school level, you see kids or, you know, parents, they complain that maybe the best player is getting better treatment than certain other players on the team. You know, I think the thing they create, especially on the high school level, you know, is accountability with everybody on the team, whether it be, you know, the best player on the team is scoring 20 points or maybe the guy who comes in at the end of the games. And I think your kids need to see that. They need to see that, you know, everybody is treated the same. Everybody is held to the same standards. Everyone is held the same accountability in terms of showing up on time, whether it be for a team meal or for practice or for a lifting session. I think that's one thing you need to, you know, create right away with your team. We're fortunate down here just because of our schedule and how everything works is, you know, just being around your guys. You know, that's big in college. You see it all the time. You know, coaches are, you know, doing, you know, things with their guys all the time, whether, you know, you see guys now doing a bunch of, you know, military training type activities, you know, whether it's even like team meals or, you know, going like bowling or miniature golfing or something like that. Just being around your guys and showing them that, you know, not only are you a coach for them that year, you know, but you want to be a part of their life outside of basketball. I think it really helps a lot of younger players now when they know that you're not invested in them as a basketball player, you're invested in them as a person. And when you can show a kid that, I think they play harder for you. They continue to grow, and they help you grow as well.
Yeah, those relationships and just being able to spend time with your players, and I'm sure that's, again, a very unique situation from a high school. You know, possibly, I guess there's some boarding schools and prep schools that have maybe a similar situation. But for the most part, compared to a normal high school experience, those kids there at IMG and you as the coaches are getting to spend a lot more time directly with your players. How does it work with, obviously, you know, the kids are staying there on campus. How does it work in terms of parents, would you say, in your opinion, compared to, again, a normal high school environment in terms of parents being at games, parents being involved in their kids' careers, and just conversations that you have with parents? How does that piece of it fall into place?
Yeah, and we have great support from our parents in my games, and I think the biggest thing with, you know, parents, especially in the high school setting, is just being able to have a good line of communication with them. So we send out, you know, weekly emails, you know, our phone, our email is always open for any questions. Just making sure we're in with your parents all the time. You know, you see them at games, communicating with them, how's everything going. With them and also with their son. I think just the parents, you know, the biggest thing that can fall apart sometimes is just having a lack of communication. And parents know, I think, if you're communicating with them, that's really what they're looking for, what they want. Just making sure you're staying on top of that. Make sure you're communicating with them, you know, whether it be daily, whether it be weekly. Monthly, letting them know what's going on with the team, what's looking ahead, what's going on in school, especially at the high school level. I feel it's important to, communicate things academically, such as like SAT date, ACT date, just making sure that you're showing parents and communicating with them stuff that, moms doesn't have to do with basketball necessarily, but has to do with the growth of their son.
What percentage of your kids are in-state Florida kids, and what percentage are from other parts of the U.S. and the world? Is there, is it more of Florida-centric, or is it much more of a national base?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, I can't give you an answer for the entire program. From my team in general, I know I have five guys on the team that are from outside the United States. And I know we have four guys who are residents of Florida, before they can come here, obviously. And then a couple guys who are, from outside the Florida area who have, obviously, board now at IMG.
Yeah, it's got to be fun, at least from a culture standpoint, to bring in people from all over, different backgrounds, different places that they've grown up, and kind of try to build everybody together, into a team. I'm sure as a coach, that's got to be a lot of fun. And for the kids, again, it just expands their horizons to be able to have kids from all over the place be a part of their team, as opposed to, you're at a local public high school and it maybe just kids that you grew up with. I'm sure it forces you to sort of adapt and grow as a person, as a player, as a coach, when you have kids from all different, different parts of the country, different parts of the world.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, those experiences with guys from all over the world, like you said, they're going to help these kids, as they move on after basketball, when they're in the workforce, when you get a job, you don't know who you're going to be working with. It can be people from all different backgrounds, and you got to be able to adapt to that, and you need to be able to create those relationships when those things happen. And, a situation like this, it really prepares you for that.
How much time or how much interaction is there between the entire basketball staff there at IMG, the coaches of all the different teams? How much time in season, out of season, do you spend together as an entire basketball staff kind of planning out and thinking about what the entire program and curriculum is? And then how much time do you spend individually with your own staff for your own team? How does that balance out?
One of the things we actually recently just started on Monday is we do a Monday coaches roundtable. Bob Walsh, who is our technical director down here at IMG Academy, was the head coach at Maine, head coach at Rhode Island College before that, has really done an excellent job of bringing together coaches. One of the benefits of being around so many coaches and having so many teams on campus is that's 15 to 20 basketball lines that are in one area throughout a whole week. So it's getting getting the opportunity to get better as a coach, where you're learning from different, you know, guys on staff, or, you know, the women's team or the postgraduate program, of just seeing different things that they do in practice. You know, you'll have your own practice, but you can also go watch somebody else's practice. It just helps you as a coach, because you're able to pick up certain things that you might not have thought about, or drill that you might not do right now. But you might have saw it, and, you know, you can go up to the coach and say, listen, I like, you know, such a drill you did. Can you go with me? That's hard to find in most places. It's something that we're fortunate to have. So we get together monthly with the coaches around table. Our guys, you know, in our varsity program, we're talking all the time about, you know, daily basis of, you know, how can we get better? What's going on with your team? What are you guys working on? You know, what have you seen? You know, so it's just the ability to be around a bunch of different coaches throughout the day, and really just pick their brains about what they're doing and, you know, what we can do better. They might have watched our practice and said, you know, I think, you know, you teach like this, and you just got to be receptive to it.
Yeah, having that, you know, vast network of coaches that are part of the program there, I'm sure is of tremendous value to, you know, each and every coach, including yourself, just to be able to, again, see how different people are approaching, you know, similar problems, or, you know, different drills that you may not have seen or used before. And just everybody, when you have that huge meeting of the minds, it just makes everything, I'm sure, you know, a little bit more wide open, where you can find a new idea, a new thought, a new way of doing things. And to have those kinds of resources that you can bounce ideas off of all the time, I can only imagine is tremendously valuable. Because a lot of times, you know, I think it's better today because of the internet and social media and the ability to connect with people. But I've always felt like coaching is sort of can be an isolating profession, in that, you know, you get caught up in your season and, you know, you have your assistant coaches, and those are pretty much the people that you're talking to all the time. And you never really get a chance to step outside of your own team and your own little environment to really get some outside opinions or thoughts or just perspective on what you're doing and how you're doing it. And so you guys kind of have that built in there at IMG. And I'm sure that's a, you know, a huge advantage, just to be able to have resources that you can reach out and talk to, especially with the, you know, the quality of the staff that you guys have put together down there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, it's been a huge help for me. And like I said, it actually helped me continue to get better, you know, as a coach on a daily basis. And, you know, it's something that I really appreciate, you know, being down here.
So as you look forward, let's wrap up with this question. As you look forward to your career there at IMG, what are some things that you're looking forward to moving into the future as you get through? Obviously, you're in the middle of your season right now, and it's your first one down there. But as you move through, what are you looking forward to the process of continuing your career there at IMG?
You know, the one thing that, you know, I'm really looking forward to, you know, it's just growth of the program. I've only been here, you know, a couple months, you know, but we have other coaches on staff that, you know, been here for a few years, and, you know, they really talked about, you know, just the whole program changing, a lot more, you know, talented players coming into the program every year, you know, teams getting better. You know, a lot of the stuff we've done differently this year, like I talked about with the coaches around you, you know, and I think the point of emphasis of just really investing in, you know, not only our kids, but our coaches, to get better as well. Something that I'm really looking forward to the growth of, you know, because I think at times coaches can get a little stagnant, and, you know, they kind of just do the same thing year in and year out. You know, so here, you know, your team could change every year. You know, we're not necessarily one and done, but you could have to do it, you know, run a different offense next year, run a different defense just based on your personnel, you know, and who's either moving up and down, you know, in the academy. So the growth of that is really something that I'm looking forward to. And, you know, I've heard some great things about how it's improved over the last, you know, two-three-year period, and just continuing to see that evolve. And like I said, continuing to evolve as a coach myself. Like I talked about earlier, recruiting was, you know, kind of my thing in college, and something that I took, you know, real pride in. You know, but I think I could have been better as more of an on-the-court, you know, tactical you know, that coach. That's something that, you know, I've been able to grow in here and look forward to definitely continuing to grow in that area.
Yeah, having the resources there at IMG, I'm sure, is exciting. And as, again, when you're spending that amount of time with all those other great coaches, you're going to only continue to grow, and I'm sure the program is going to continue to grow and get better. And it's just a unique situation that you guys have down there. Before we get out of here, Bobby, can you just share out your contact information for people who have listened to the podcast that may want to reach out to you? And then if there's anything that we didn't touch on tonight that you want to share with the audience, go ahead and do both of those things now.
No problem, guys. If you know, any coaches, anybody would love to get in touch with me, more than willing to have reach out. My email is bobby.gordon@img.com. You can send it right over there, or you can get me on Twitter at BobJordan1. Those are the two best places to probably reach out and connect.
Absolutely. Bobby, we can't thank you enough for jumping on the podcast with us tonight. We appreciate you taking the time. We know you shared a lot of interesting things about both your own career and what you guys have going down at IMG. And we can't thank you enough for jumping on. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Hello, Hoopheads. This is Alan Stein Jr. My new book, Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, will be available from all major book retailers on January 8th. Raise Your Game takes a rare peek behind the curtain and shows you what the top coaches and players in the game do during the unseen hours. I share their routines, rituals, and habits, as well as proven strategies that you can implement with your team immediately. If you want to maximize your coaching impact and influence, order your copy today at RaiseYourGameBook.com.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our Academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have four different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.